Chapter 4. Sabrina dropped her glass, and it shattered on the kitchen floor. The crash snapped her out of her shock, and she sprang into action. She raced into the dining room, pulled her sister from her chair, and shoved her under the table. "Stay here," she ordered, then ran for the front door, shouting for Granny and Mr. Canis. In her bare feet, she raced outside and around the corner into the backyard. She found her uncle lying face down. Sabrina gently turned him over, and he let out a groan.
"Uncle Jake!" she cried.
Though looking at him closely, she wasn't positive that he was her uncle. There was something wrong with his face. He had a goatee and a large scar on his neck that looked as if a rope had been tied around it. His hair was gray on the sides, and his eyes seemed dull. He was clearly in a great deal of pain.
"Brina!"
"Granny and Mr. Canis are going to help you. They're on their way,"
Sabrina said through sobs.
"Brina, you look so young," he said. "You look just like you did when you were 12.
"He's raving from the pain," Sabrina thought to herself. "He needs a doctor right away. Someone help us!" she yelled.
The storm above was incredibly loud, so she shouted again. She climbed to her feet and turned to the house.
"Help!"
Elvis joined her cries with baleful barking, and in no time, Granny and Mr. Canis were rushing out of the house.
"Liebling, what is the matter?"
Granny begged. She was in her nightgown and slippers and had a green mud mask on her face.
"It's Uncle Jake. He's been hurt,"
Sabrina cried, turning to the fallen man. But there was no sign of him. Bewildered, Sabrina scanned the edge of the woods. How could he have crawled away so quickly and without her noticing? She studied the lawn, searching for a trail of blood, but there was nothing.
"But he was lying right here on the ground. I saw him. I saw the arrow. He was dying."
Elvis rushed to the place where Uncle Jake had been lying. He sniffed the ground and whined.
"Child, you are mistaken," Canis said. "I can smell such things. No one has been injured."
"Sabrina, it's late. You must have been having a bad dream," Granny said. "Your Opa Basil used to walk in his sleep, too."
"No! I saw him. He was right here. We have to look for him," she cried.
Uncle Jake walked around from the front of the house. He was his normal self. No scar on his neck and no goatee. "What's all the commotion?" Sabrina suddenly felt woozy. Her eyes filled with little flashes of light and her face grew hot.
"You were hurt,"
she tried to say. But then everything went black. When Sabrina awoke the next morning, she felt as if she had been asleep for 100 years. She was groggy and awkward, and her legs felt like cooked spaghetti as she descended the steps to join her family for breakfast. When she saw that Uncle Jake was working his way through a box of donuts, she began to wonder if her grandmother was right. Maybe the entire incident had just been a vivid nightmare.
"Feeling better?"
Granny said, entering the dining room with a tray of what looked like magenta-colored hash browns. The old woman scooped a spoonful on everyone's plate and a second helping onto Puck's. Elvis hovered under the table, licking Sabrina's feet, as if to remind her that he had seen the odd incident as well.
"I'm fine,"
Sabrina said, though her head felt full of sludge.
"We were worried when you fainted. I fear you may have accidentally touched something at Baba Yaga's house that made you hallucinate," Granny said.
"What does hallucinate mean?"
Daphne asked.
"It's when you think you see something that isn't really there," Sabrina said.
"It usually means you've lost your marbles," Puck added.
"We're going to have to be more careful when we go back,"
their grandmother said as she sat down to eat.
"Go back?" Sabrina exclaimed. "There's no way we're setting foot in that loony bin again."
"I can't wait to go back," Puck said. Baba Yaga is very punk rock.
Sabrina, of course we have to go back when we find her wand, Granny said, kissing her on the forehead. Now, hurry up and eat, and then get dressed. We've got another busy day ahead of us.
Are we back on the case? Daphne asked, in between bites. Granny nodded. But first, we have to pay our taxes.
The courthouse was a grand building with a dome and marble columns. It sat just a few doors down from the police station. Outside, a huge crowd of people milled around carrying signs and shouting angrily.
Looks like a protest, Sabrina said,
noticing a sign that had the word tax painted on it, with a big red slash through it. Mr. Canis pulled the car over to the side of the road to park.
Relda, I don't believe it would be wise for me to walk through that crowd in my current condition.
Granny agreed.
Yes, a 7-foot man with a tail might attract some attention. Stay here. We'll be back in a jiffy.
The Grimms eased their way through the angry mob and up the steps of the building. The people they passed looked desperate. An elderly man grabbed Sabrina by the arm and pleaded,
They can't do this to us. We've got nowhere to go.
Frightened, Sabrina pulled away and caught up with her grandmother and sister. They entered the double doors of the courthouse and immediately spotted an armed guard who gave them directions to the tax assessor's office.
Is there much of a line?
Granny asked the man. The guard shook his head.
You're the first people I know of who have the money to pay.
Following his directions, they soon came to a door at the end of a long, narrow hallway. Tax assessor's office was stenciled on the door, and a little red tag hanging from the doorknob read, Be back in 15 minutes.
I guess we have to wait, Granny said.
15 minutes turned into 2.5 hours. Eventually, they spotted a short, stocky person approaching from the other end of the hallway. As she came closer, Sabrina recognized Mayor Hart, the former Queen of Hearts, from the famous Alice adventures documented by Lewis Carroll. Sabrina thought she looked like a demented beauty pageant contestant. Her face was painted in bold, harsh colors, blood red lips, dark purple eyeshadow, mahogany brown eyebrows, and a black hole of a beauty mark on her left cheek. She was wearing an elaborate crimson gown of silk and lace that had little red hearts sewn into it. She also held an electronic megaphone in one bloated pink hand. The angry mob followed behind her, waving their tax assessment letters in the air furiously. Mayor Hart seemed to be enjoying their frustration and hopelessness, or perhaps she had applied a permanent smile with her obnoxious makeup. Sabrina couldn't be sure.
People, what's done is done, Mayor Hart said through the entirely too loud megaphone.
Her words blasted the people and echoed off the walls, causing a high-pitched feedback that rang in everyone's ears.
The city needs the funds, and you're going to pay them, or you're going to move.
I'll get a lawyer, a man threatened.
Feel free, Hart snapped. But I have a feeling any lawyer in this town is in the same boat as you. Now get lost. I'll have the sheriff lock you all up.
For what? One man shouted. It's still legal to protest in this country.
Then I'll have you locked up for being ugly. Now scram!
The people filed out slowly, muttering threats at the mayor until she and the Grimm family were left alone. Hart looked at them and let out a little laugh. She took out a key and unlocked the door to the tax assessor's office, snatching the little note off the door as she stepped inside. Granny Relda and the girls followed her through the door. They found themselves in a small, windowless office lined with big gray file cabinets. There was a single well-worn counter separating the room into an office area and a waiting area. Hart stepped behind the counter and set a bell down on top of it.
Good morning, Mayor Hart, Granny said as she stepped up to the counter.
The mayor said nothing. In fact, she opened up a drawer, took out a newspaper, and started reading the day's headlines.
Hello? Sabrina said.
Daphne tugged on her grandmother's sleeve and pointed to a sign on the wall. It read, Ring bell for service. Granny looked as if she might leap over the counter and strangle Mayor Hart, but she took a deep breath, reached over, and lightly tapped the bell. The mayor looked up from her paper and flashed the family a forced smile filled with crooked yellow teeth.
"Can I help you?"
"Mayor Hart, I didn't realize that you were required to collect taxes personally," Granny said.
"Oh, I'm not," the mayor said with a twisted giggle. "But this job is just too much fun to let someone else do it. I suppose you're here to see if you can talk your way out of your debt, too?"
"Not at all," Granny said, as she fished in her handbag and took out a stack of money. "I'm here to pay the bill."
The mayor's face turned bright red, even through her white pancake makeup. She tried to speak, but fell into a coughing fit for several moments before she managed to squeak out,
"You what?"
"I said we've come to pay our taxes. This is the correct office?"
The mayor stammered, and looked as if she might lapse into another fit.
"Yes, it is."
"Very well,"
the old woman said, as she placed the stack of cash in the mayor's hand.
$150,000.
Ms. Hart reached underneath the counter and snatched her megaphone. She lifted it to her mouth, pushed the button, and bellowed,
"Nottingham!"
The feedback rattled Sabrina's ears. A moment later, the foul sheriff hobbled into the office.
"I hear you, woman. If you haven't noticed, I'm a little busy. There's a mob outside, and some fool on Mount Taurus swears he's seen a dinosaur running around up there. Can you believe that? A dinosaur? I put him in a cell for being intoxicated."
"Who cares?"
the mayor bellowed into her megaphone.
"The Grimms have arrived to pay their taxes."
Nottingham laughed long and hard, but then seemed to realize his boss was not joking. He slammed his fist down on the counter, cursed, and spit on the floor.
"Why, the two of you act as if you're disappointed that we can pay," Granny said, obviously enjoying the change in mood.
Sabrina could have sworn she heard sarcasm in her grandmother's voice. Nottingham snatched the money out of the mayor's hand, flipped through it as if he suspected it were counterfeit, and then slammed it on the table.
"We're going to need a receipt," Granny said sweetly.
Mayor Hart snarled. Then she snatched a book of receipts off a nearby desk, scribbled onto one of them, and ripped it out of the book.
"This isn't over," Hart said, dangling the receipt out of the reach of Granny Relda.
"Oh, we never doubted that for a second,"
the old woman replied, grabbing the receipt. She placed it safely into her handbag, took the girls by the hand, and escorted them out of the office.
"Have a nice day,"
Daphne said, just before they closed the door. Sabrina heard the mayor and the sheriff scream in frustration as the family walked back down the hallway. They stepped outside, and for a moment the three Grimms gazed down at the throngs of desperate citizens.
"These poor people," Granny Relda said. "If we had enough, I'd give them all the money they need."
"There's not enough money in the world," Sabrina replied. "Mayor Hart wants them out of Ferryport Landing. Anyway, we should be worried about us. What are we going to do if we're the last human family left in the town?"
"I don't know, Liebling," the old woman said as they stepped into the street. "But for now, we should get back to our mystery. Who knows when Baba Yaga is going to lose her patience?"
Suddenly, Sheriff Nottingham rushed through the crowd, waving a paper over his head.
"Oh, Mrs. Grimm!"
"Sheriff, is there a problem?" Granny asked.
"Indeed," Nottingham said.
Sabrina couldn't help but stare at the horrible scar that ran down the man's face. She wondered if that was what made him so ugly, or if he had been grotesque before the knife had done its work.
"It appears we've miscalculated the tax on your property." "Oh, a refund," Granny said, clapping her hands.
"Bah," the man said with a sick laugh. "The audit on your house failed to calculate the value of the land it is built on. You have nearly 3 acres of incredibly valuable property. I'm afraid we need to add to your tax liability."
How much more? Sabrina said suspiciously.
Oh, just another $300,000, the sheriff replied.
That's outrageous, Granny Relda cried.
It is, isn't it?
Nottingham said, as a sinister grin crept across his face.
And when we pay this, what are you going to tax next? The air around the house? You're just trying to get rid of us, Sabrina shouted.
Well, Mrs. Grimm, your girls are a lot more clever than I was led to believe, the sheriff said.
By the way, the taxes are still due on Friday.
When they got home, Granny Relda was dazed and distant, talking to herself in German. She made some peanut butter and rose petal sandwiches for the girls and Puck, and then asked Uncle Jake and Mr. Canis for a moment of their time. The three adults climbed the steps upstairs for some privacy.
This is bad, Daphne said.
Don't worry, Marshmallow. You'll get used to the cold, Puck said as he slathered mustard all over his sandwich.
Granny will come up with an answer, Sabrina said angrily. She flashed the boy a look that said, shut your trap.
Moments later, Uncle Jake returned. Good news, girls. I'm going to help you with your case. Your grandmother is a little busy with the financials, but it's nothing to worry about.
Granny said that yesterday when we only owed $150,000, Daphne reminded him.
It's all details. Now, where are we on the case?
At a dead end, Sabrina reminded him.
Any suspects?
Too many to count, Daphne said.
Uncle Jake scratched his head. Well, let's put our noggins together for a second. Both the victims had something magical stolen from them. Whoever or whatever stole the objects was pretty small. The victims were both ever-afters. What else do they have in common?
Daphne spoke up. They're both women.
They're both very powerful, Sabrina added.
They were both here the other night, Puck said, without looking up from his fourth sandwich.
Everyone turned to look at him. Sabrina was shocked that the boy fairy had even noticed.
That's a good point, Puck, Uncle Jake said. Both of our victims visited us 2 nights ago.
Do you think there might be a connection? Sabrina asked.
Could be, Uncle Jake said. Let's go ask some of the others that came by. Maybe they've got something missing, too.
There were a lot of guests. Who should we see first? Daphne asked.
Uncle Jake grinned. Let's go talk to Briar. Sabrina rolled her eyes. As they drove through the town, Uncle Jake chattered on about how pretty Briar Rose was, how smart Briar Rose was, how he hoped Briar Rose wasn't mixed up in the mystery. After a while, even Daphne got tired of hearing him sing the princess's praises. Puck threatened to leap from the car several times to end his misery, and Sabrina was considering joining him. Luckily, Briar's place of business was not far. Ms. Rose owned a quaint little coffee shop 3 blocks from the courthouse. It bordered the Hudson River, not far from the train station and a tiny marina. Sacred Grounds, as it was called, was a favorite of coffee fanatics. The chalkboard outside promised dozens of different coffees, from espressos to something called a cafe macchiato. It also advertised a variety of muffins, scones, cookies, and donuts. Sabrina had passed the shop many times and noted that it was always jam-packed with customers. Coffee seemed to have the same effect on adults as magic did on her. She remembered her own mother waiting in line for an hour to buy a $7 latte. Once outside the store, Uncle Jake ran his fingers through his hair, blew into his hand to make sure his breath was sweet, and straightened the collar of his shirt.
How do I look? He asked the children.
Why do you care? She's just a girl, Puck said. Girls are disgusting.
You won't always feel like that, Uncle Jake said.
Want to bet?
You look mucho handsomo, Daphne said, straightening the cuff of her uncle's coat. Uncle Jake winked at the little girl, then led everyone into the shop. It was wall to wall with people, chatting, working on laptop computers, and sipping from tall, frothy cups of coffee. There were several little tables scattered about and a bright glass case in the front filled with pastries. There was also a long line of impatient, agitated people. Sabrina spotted Briar Rose behind the counter. Even with her hair pulled back and an apron tied around her waist, she was a knockout. She worked the cash register, ringing up orders and keeping the line moving as quickly as possible, which wasn't easy. Most of the customers wanted coffees with ridiculously long names and detailed preparation instructions. "I want a large decaf non-fat soy iced latte with sugar-free hazelnut. Give me a triple red-eye espresso over lactose-free milk with cane sugar.
One extra-large chai tea swirl with a dash of fresh cinnamon."
The family got into the line and slowly worked their way to the counter.
"Jacob,"
Ms. Rose said sweetly when it was their turn.
"Briar," he replied. "You look amazing."
The princess blushed.
"You always say that."
"It's always true."
"Don't distract her," said a little old woman at the end of the line. "I need my caffeine, and I need it now."
"Sorry, Mrs. Finnegan," the princess said.
"It'll only take a second."
"Come on, pal," a man shouted from the middle of the line. "We've been here a long time."
Sabrina cringed. "They're going to kill us all right here in the store."
"Briar, what is the holdup?"
Mallow Barb asked as she approached from behind the counter, Buzzflower by her side. When the fairy godmothers spotted Uncle Jake, they scowled.
"Only paying customers," Buzzflower said angrily.
"Hello, ladies, we're happy to buy something," Uncle Jake said. "In fact, we haven't had lunch yet. I suppose we'll take four of those blueberry muffins, and I'll have a coffee."
"What kind of coffee?"
Mallow Barb snapped.
"What kind?"
Coffee, he replied. The line let out a collective groan, and Mrs. Finnegan could be heard muttering,
"Amateurs."
"Get him the African blend,"
Briar said to her fairy godmothers. They gave her a suspicious look, but rushed to fill the order. This gave the two adults a rare moment together without the watchful eyes of the rotund fairy chaperones.
"Any chance you could take a break?" Uncle Jake said.
"No!"
Everyone in the line shouted.
"We're in the middle of our lunchtime rush," Briar explained.
"Just a second," Uncle Jake pleaded, flashing a handsome grin at the princess. Briar Rose laughed and then took off her apron.
"Ladies, I'll be right back,"
she said as she tossed her apron on the counter. The line turned on the Grimms. There was rage in their faces.
"People, try some decaf," Uncle Jake said.
He opened the door wide, ushered the children out, and then bowed deeply as Briar Rose passed.
"Sorry about that,"
Briar said once they were outside. "Coffee is addictive, and people get angry when they need their fix."
"I've gotten warmer receptions from banshees," Uncle Jake said with a grin.
"At least Mallow Barb and Buzzflower didn't try to turn you into a dung beetle this time,"
Briar replied.
"I told you I'd win them over."
Briar laughed.
"I had a nice time last night."
"I'm still embarrassed about the meatball," Jake said, blushing.
"I had no idea they were so aerodynamic,"
Ms. Rose said with a giggle.
"I have to admit, I'm a bit of a klutz. If you keep seeing me, I'm going to ruin your entire wardrobe."
"Well, then you're lucky I like to shop," the princess said.
"Could someone kill me?" Puck begged. "If I have to hear one more word of this mushy love story, I'm going to throw myself off a bridge."
I hate to admit it, but he's right. Aren't we supposed to be solving a mystery?" Sabrina said.
"Well, hello,"
a voice said from behind them. The group turned around to find Tom Baxter crossing the street. He was with three young men, all wearing glasses and sweaters. Each wore a button pinned to his clothes that read, "I called the Dr. Cindy Show."
"Nice to see you again," the old man said with a smile.
"Nice to see you too," Daphne said. "Where's Dr. Cindy?"
Tom pointed across the street to a tall building with a huge metal tower on its roof. Granny had once told Sabrina that it was the offices of Ferryport Landing's radio station, WFPR.
"She's busy preparing for tonight's show," Tom said. "It takes a lot of work and an awful lot of planning." "But I'm being rude. Folks, these are some of my colleagues. Malcolm is our show's producer, Alexander is our sound engineer, and Bradford fields phone calls. They also help me cross the street from time to time."
Everyone introduced themselves and shook hands.
I never miss a show, Puck said. Sabrina turned, half expecting to find the boy laughing, but he was deadly serious.
What?
Puck said defensively.
You should hear the people that call Dr. Cindy. All of them are sad, depressed, and lonely. It's one of the funniest shows on the radio.
Malcolm frowned. Well, we better get our coffee and get back.
He's right, Tom said. Cindy can be a real bear when she doesn't get her latte.
The Grimms watched Tom and his co-workers enter the coffee shop. Then they turned back to Ms. Rose.
Briar, a few people at our party have had some things stolen from their homes, Uncle Jake said. I don't want to pry, but if something were missing, we suspect it would be something magical. Have you or your fairy godmothers been robbed?
Mallow Barb and Buzzflower don't let their magic wands out of their sight, and all I have at home are a few magic seeds. Everything is accounted for.
Perhaps I should come over some evening and just make sure, Uncle Jake said with a grin.
You never quit, do you? Ms. Rose said with a laugh. Maybe you should ask Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus. Her office is right next door.
Good idea. Kids, do you want to go do that? Uncle Jake said, winking at them. Sabrina didn't have to be a mind reader to know he was trying to get a little alone time with the princess.
Sure, we'll go take a look,
Sabrina said, pulling her sister and Puck along. They walked next door and spotted a sign on the building that read, Dr. F. Pfefferkuchenhaus, dentist. On the front door was a painting of several happy children with enormous, toothy smiles. All of them were saying, Everyone smiles for Dr. P. in a big cartoon balloon.
What's a dentist? Puck asked.
Sabrina cringed, imagining the cavities the boy must have.
There's a question you don't ever want to hear someone ask you.
The lobby was clean and neat, with paintings of dancing teeth all over the walls. A thin receptionist with eyeglasses that made her look like an owl sat at the desk filling out paperwork.
Welcome to Dr. P's, she said when she looked up.
Her glasses were so thick, Sabrina wondered if the woman might be able to see through her.
Do you have an appointment?
No, actually, we were hoping we could talk to the doctor. Tell her that Sabrina and Daphne Grimm are here. She'll see us.
The receptionist picked up the phone and tapped a few buttons.
Dr. P, I'm sorry. I know you're with a patient. There are three children out here who say they know you. They say their last name is Grimm.
Really?
Of course.
She hung up the phone and got up from her seat.
She'll see you.
She led the group through the hallway past several open doorways. As they walked past, Sabrina could see patients sitting in dental chairs getting their teeth cleaned. The high-pitched squeal of drills filled the air. Somewhere, a man let out a painful groan.
Is this a torture chamber? Puck asked eagerly. Listen to all the suffering. Isn't it cool?
This is a dental office, the receptionist explained. People come here to get a healthy smile.
There was another groan. Puck laughed.
Sure, that guy sounds like he's smiling all right. Are you hiring?
The receptionist brought them to a room where they found the gingerbread witch probing the teeth of a very nervous man in a chair. Sabrina had read the story of Hansel and Gretel and knew the witch's reputation, but at the same time she knew Frau P. occasionally came to the family's assistance. Was she one of the good guys or a villain? Sabrina couldn't be sure. She had certainly never suspected that the woman's day job was dentistry. Hadn't she once had a house made out of candy?
Mr. Easy, can you feel that?
She asked her patient. He had a suction tube in his mouth and Dr. P's fingers on his tongue. The man said no, though with some difficulty.
What about that?
No.
Good. And what about this one here?
The man cried out in agony.
Okay. Looks like you need some more gas, the witch said,
covering Mr. Easy's face with a mask connected to a tank by a long tube. The man took several deep breaths, and his tense hands relaxed their grip on the sides of his chair.
Hello, Grimms. What can I do for you? The witch said. I'm having a special on root canals.
We'll pass,
Sabrina said.
We're investigating a series of crimes. Maybe you've heard about Morgan Le Fay and Baba Yaga's problems?
"Indeed I have," the witch said. "Let me finish up with Mr. Easy here, and I'll be right with you." Dr. P picked up a tiny drill and turned it on. It whined loudly, and then she went to work on the poor man's teeth. The gas she had given him must have been wonderfully strong, as he barely even noticed the awful crunching noises. Puck pushed his way in front of the girls to get a better view of the procedure.
"I think I know what I want to be when I grow up," he said.
"Oh, there's lots of money in dentistry," the witch said over the noise. "People just can't get enough of the sugary sweets, and they rarely floss. I've got appointments backed up for months."
"You mean people pay you to do this to them? I thought you had captured these people and brought them here against their will. How do I become a dentist?"
"You have to go to school," Sabrina said, hoping the thought of an education might deter Puck's sudden career choice.
"You do?" the witch said, eyeing Sabrina. "I didn't know that."
Mr. Easy let out a groan, then mumbled something about seeing her medical license.
"What's that? You need more gas?"
the witch said, shoving the mask back onto the man's face. Several seconds later, he returned to La La Land.
"I used to sell candy out of this place, but once the story got around, I couldn't drag children into the store."
"The Hansel and Gretel story?" Daphne said to clarify.
The witch nodded.
"It ruined my business."
"Are you surprised?" Sabrina said. "You did try to eat them," Daphne added.
"Oh, I did not," the witch said, suddenly jerking and making a terrible cracking sound in Mr. Easy's mouth. "I was just trying to scare the little brats."
"That's not what I read," Sabrina said.
She knew the story of Hansel and Gretel, two children who wandered into the woods and found a house made out of candy and gingerbread. The witch had captured the children and tried to fatten them up so she could devour them. It was gruesome stuff.
"Well, you shouldn't believe everything you read. First of all, those kids were out of control, wandering around in the woods, making all kinds of racket. I mean, what kind of parent lets their kids play in a forest? Really, people should have to have a license to have children. Second, they were eating my house," the witch continued as she went back to work on Mr. Easy's bicuspid. "The boy was outside gnawing on the fence. The girl was licking the shutters. Mongrels, that's what they were. I called the police, and you know what they told me? If I was going to live in a house made of candy, I should expect children to come along and eat it. Is that what I was paying taxes for? No. So I took the law into my own hands."
"You put them into a cage," Sabrina said.
Puck laughed.
"That's so awesome."
"It was only for a couple of hours. I fed them too, and trust me, it was the only decent meal the kids had had in a long time. Their mother never saw a carbohydrate she didn't love, and those kids were really packing on the pounds. That's the part of the story no one's ever heard. Yes, I fed them, but I gave them a salad. They had no idea what it was. Apparently, they'd never had a meal that wasn't covered in cheese sauce. Well, after dinner, I let them go, and before I knew it, I was being called a cannibal. The only thing bigger than their waistbands was their imagination." The witch set her tools down and took off her rubber gloves. "Mr. Easy, I've got good news and bad news," she said to her patient, who gazed at her dreamily. "The good news is we're going to be able to save the bicuspid. The bad news, all the other teeth are going to have to come out."
"What?"
Mr. Easy cried. "You need more gas," Frau Pfefferkuchenhaus said, as she took the mask and put it over her patient's mouth and nose. "Just breathe deep." Mr. Easy's head was wobbly, and a line of drool was dribbling down his chin.
"Mogadinkel Bitterspleen,"
he mumbled. The witch got up from her chair and led the children out into the hallway.
"We don't want to bother you, but we were wondering if anything has been stolen. Say, something magical?" Sabrina said.
The ancient witch shuffled uncomfortably and nodded.
"I had a small vial of water from the Fountain of Youth."
"Why didn't you ever use it?"
Puck asked rudely.
"It doesn't make you young," she replied with an angry glare.
Can we back up? What does this water do?" Daphne said.
It stops you from getting any older. For an ever-after like me, it's worthless. We're immortal anyway. But I thought I might make a little extra cash someday selling what little I have to a human. Unfortunately, when I came in this morning, it was gone. Someone stole it right out of my locker.
Could we take a look at the locker? Sabrina asked.
The witch led the children down a hallway into a small room. There they found a table, some jackets hanging on the wall, and a row of lockers. One of the lockers had the door ripped off its hinges. It lay on the floor in a twisted heap. Whoever did it was strong enough to rip the door off, the witch said.
No, Sabrina said, holding the warped locker door. It pushed itself out from the inside. If someone had ripped it off, the bend would be going in the opposite direction.
She looked inside the locker and spotted the woman's handbag. There was a small hole in the side of it, identical to the one in Morgan Le Fay's bag.
So, you think whatever stole the water came out of this locker? The witch said.
Sabrina nodded.
Can you get the vial back for me?
The old witch continued.
We're going to try, Sabrina said. But maybe you can answer one more question. So far, the Wand of Merlin, the Wonder Clock, and your magic water are missing. Why would someone want those three things?
Just then, the receptionist entered the room.
Dr. P, Mr. Easy is trying to escape.
Give him some more gas and sit on him if you have to. I'll be right there, the witch said. When the receptionist raced back to the patient, the witch turned back to the children.
I can't honestly say. They're all pretty powerful items.
Any one of them could cause havoc in the wrong hands.
I wonder if the crooks are trying to use them all together.
All together? Sabrina said. You can do that?
Sure. If you combine the properties of different magical items, you can create a brand new kind of enchantment,
though you'd have to be a pretty good sorcerer to make sure it didn't blow up in your face. Combining magical items can have unpredictable side effects. Listen, I've got to run. The teeth don't pull themselves. If you find anything, let me know.
The witch darted down the hallway and left them alone. So, what have we learned? Daphne asked, doing a funny impression of their grandmother's German accent. Then she pretended to get out a notebook and pen and jot down notes.
I learned that you need no formal training to be a dentist, Puck said.
The Lilliputians and the mice are no longer suspects, Sabrina said. Neither are strong enough to rip a steel locker door off its hinges, unless they were on steroids.
I'm lost, Daphne said. Three break-ins, all done by something small and sneaky. We're going to have to go through the journals again.
The children exited the office and found their uncle and Briar Rose exactly where they had left them in front of the cafe.
Any luck? Uncle Jake asked, when he finally noticed that they were waiting for him.
A little, but we need to get home, Sabrina said.
The adults both frowned, but Uncle Jake eventually shrugged. He took the princess's hand and kissed it.
Until we meet again.
Okay, enough, Puck cried. If I have to, I'll turn a hose on you both.
Uncle Jake scowled. But before he could complain about them ruining his romantic moment, there was a terrible rumble, as if a tiny earthquake was erupting directly beneath the town. The tremors continued to grow in power, and then an explosion rattled the windows of the coffee shop. The noise had come from up the street. They all turned in that direction and found an unwelcome yet familiar sight. Baba Yaga and her house were stomping through town, in full view of humans. Worse, the witch was shooting buildings with fireballs emanating from one of her magic wands.